It's just glad it was all over.
Those are the feelings of Second Lieutenant Carl Haynes of G Company, 2nd Battalion, 1st Marines. He expressed those feelings a short while after he and other Marines of G Company succeeded in routing the enemy in a fierce battle just north of the Marines base at Contien. Lieutenant Haynes recounts the action of that battle.
At Contien, we developed the idea of a killer team, a small unit of 9 or 10 men which would go out, set ambushes, and make contact with the enemy. They received special training from our commanding officer, Captain Copeland, and our executive officer, Lieutenant Cummings. Lieutenant Cummings had taken two killer teams out to Hill 86, which is about 2,000 meters from Contien. While they were out there with two killer teams, which consist of about 18 men, they came upon about a company of the NVA and got themselves surrounded and called for help. Captain Copeland, our commanding officer, mounted out the rest of the company, and we went out to rescue the killer teams. As we were moving on down there with the rest of the company, we came upon fire, machine gun fire to our front. They had left a rear element to stay and fight and move around the killer teams, which consisted of one heavy machine gun, two light machine guns, plus their individual riflemen. And as we moved through the area, we had no way of telling where our killer teams were or where the enemy were exactly. All you could see was the machine gun bullets from their round, their tracer rounds, coming through the trees, knocking down the banana leaves in front of you, and keeping everyone pretty well pinned down. Captain Copeland was traveling with my platoon, 1st Platoon, and he maneuvered one squad along the tree line, and they knocked out one heavy machine gun and killed about 7 or 8 of the enemy, and moved on into the area where the killer teams were and started setting up security. And as he did this, we moved in, sweeping as we went, and we killing more of the enemy, setting in security so we could secure a landing zone for the helicopters, which came in later.
Well, Lieutenant Haynes, what type of positions were the enemy set up in?
The positions they were set in were bunkers. They were well dug in bunkers, well camouflaged, well built. You could hardly see them until you came right upon them.
What type of enemy weapons fire were you receiving?
We were receiving heavy machine gun fire, plus they had two other light machine guns with them, plus AK-47s, which is their automatic rifle equivalent to our M14.
Approximately how far from the DMZ would you say that this action took place?
No more than 200 or 300 meters. We were real close. Anywhere you went outside of Contien, you were real close to the DMZ. And the trace, which is the cleared open stretch all the way to the ocean, was about 100 meters to our left flank, so it couldn't have been no more than 200 or 300 meters from the DMZ.
Approximately how long did the action last?
I would say the action lasted about 15 or 20 minutes.
When it was all over with and the enemy had retreated and you'd successfully gotten the killer teams out of the immediate danger, what would you say that your feelings were at that time?
Well, after the action was all over, it's kind of a feeling of relief. In one respect, I had one man killed from my platoon and three men pretty seriously wounded. I was relieved that it wasn't any more serious than this. I always hate to have anyone hurt, but there's a lot of good people out here, and they're all doing their job, and it's just glad it was all over.
Second Lieutenant Carl Haynes. The enemy hadn't figured on the Marines of G Company being able to help out that quickly. This is Marine Sergeant Chris Harris reporting from the Combat Information Bureau in Da Nang, Vietnam. Marine reconnaissance teams have an extremely dangerous and most oftentimes rewarding job. But few, if any, reconnaissance teams have ever experienced what Sergeant Durwood Waddell's team did on a patrol near Dong Ha. In his story, he makes reference to an FO, a forward observer, Arvin, an Army of the Republic of Vietnam soldier, and an NVA, a North Vietnamese soldier. This is Sergeant Waddell's story.
It was about the first 3 days, and we haven't seen a thing, and we thought it was just going to be a dull patrol. We were walking down the road, and we saw a group of children about 500 meters to our left. We decided to cut into the brush, and in doing so, we spotted this FO. At first, we were real close to the Arvin RZ, so we thought he might have been an Arvin observer. So we got down, and we noticed that he had a telescopic sight, and he was overlooking Donghua with it. So we assigned my people, and we got online. We crawled to about 15 meters within his position so we could get a better look. He kept on popping his head up and down, and we could make out that he was an NVA, and we decided we're going to try and overrun his position and take the telescopic scope which we spotted. Normally we don't do anything like this because we're just out there for a reconnaissance mission, but since this was a very important piece of equipment, we thought we'd try and get it. All at once, by a grenade to all my people, we opened up and started assaulting the position. We walked through it, and killing the one, and the rest took off through the bushes. We set up a 360 and searched out the body to see what we had. And then so we discovered that we found out the scope was a Russian made. It had a Russian emblem on it, and it was sighted right in on Donghua base. He had some documents, and they had all found out all later that they had all the positions pinpointed in I believe it was 8-digit coordinates.
After Sergeant Waddell's recon team had captured the forward observer's equipment and documents, they were taken under heavy enemy fire, but Marine Huey helicopter gunships soon silenced the enemy. The enemy, however, were not content to let the Marines escape, and later that same evening, the enemy hit the Marine patrol. Sergeant Waddell called his base for helicopters to take his patrol out of the area.
About 8 o'clock that night, we had 234s on the way, and one flare ship called Spooky. It was flying over, dropping flares, illuminating the area. So I got my team together, and we moved out to the rice paddy where we could get out for an LZ. We set up a 360 in the rice paddy, and the birds began coming down. We guided them in by a strobe light and some pencil flares. The first bird came down, and they tried to get us all out because they caught a couple rounds coming down. We all got in, the bird lifted off, and it couldn't take us all, so they dropped three of us off and took the rest. The second bird came in, and the rest of us piled in with captured documents and gear, and took off, and everything was fine then.
The Marines made it safely back to the combat base at Donghua. And for Sergeant Durbin Waddell and his recon team, they were telling the story of the enemy forward observer that was looking the wrong way. This is Marine Sergeant Chris Harris reporting from the Combat Information Bureau in Da Nang, Vietnam.
Operation Pegasus is in its second day, and already Marine tanks and heavy vehicles have begun rolling down Route 9 to Khe Sanh. I'm speaking to the commander of one of those tanks, Corporal John A. Hughes of Pensacola, Florida. John, we're up here aboard your M48 tank. Can you tell us what your mission is here in Operation Pegasus? Why have they sent you down here on Route 9?
As far as I know, we're supposed to be making a sweep to Khe Sanh.
Well, John, what's the advantage of having tanks sweep along with the infantry, especially when we're on a road like this?
Well, we got mobility, we can move them from one place to another real fast, a lot of extra firepower, give them a lot of support with our heavy guns, machine guns that we have.
Well, John, you're a member of the 3rd Tank Battalion, and you've operated up around this territory up near the DMZ quite a bit. Is this the first time you've ever been down Route 9?
Yes, it is.
Well, the engineers are working in front of you. Are they building bridges for you to get across?
No, most of the time they can't build a bridge big enough to support this tank. It weighs 52 tons. So generally you have to go around the bridges. And they build passes around them for us and heavy vehicles like Caterpillars and such.
John, is there any special way that tanks are employed when you're along a road like this in support of infantry?
Well, in this kind of terrain, we can't get off the road. Mostly we're just fire support for them.
Tank Commander Marine Corporal John Hughes, one of the men of Operation Pegasus near Quezon, Vietnam. Combat Correspondent Sergeant Dale Dye had that report. I'm Corporal Jim Groom with the Combat Information Bureau, Da Nang, Vietnam. Marine Civil Affairs Officer Lieutenant Dean Stepp works with a Montagnard tribesman from the DMZ area of South Vietnam. Combat Correspondent Sergeant Dale Dye interviewed Lieutenant Stepp recently during Operation Pegasus.
Lieutenant Stepp's job differs from many such civil affairs officers in Vietnam in that he works with the Montagnard, or mountain people of Vietnam. Lieutenant Stepp, can you tell us something about the Montagnard people and how they differ from the ethnic Vietnamese?
The Montagnard people came from the, originally from the mountain area to the west of South Vietnam. The majority of them have lived in the mountain area for many, many generations, and many of them are just now coming down into the lowlands and into the valleys to make their living by farming. Most of the Montagnards that I have been associated with in Kalu Valley are strictly farming, are strictly agricultural in their livelihood. They are good farmers. They work hard. The children, the men, and the women all work in the fields all day long, and they raise good crops of corn, rice, sweet potatoes, and a few peanuts and tobacco. As a people, as far as actual looks, the Montagnards differ from the Vietnamese. The Montagnards are darker skinned, much darker skinned than the Vietnamese. They're approximately the same height and approximately the same weight. However, their facial features are more square, and they keep their hair in a different manner. Many of them have long hair, and the children, they keep the hair very short on the children.
In your opinion, how are the Marines getting along with the Montagnard people?
The Marines of 3rd Battalion, 9th Marines, have gotten along very well with the Montagnard people. The Montagnards have a village approximately 1,000 meters outside of our perimeter, and we have had friendly relations with these people for the 5 months that this battalion occupied this position. Both the Marines learned about the Montagnards learned about the Marines, and there was an exchange of goodwill on both sides. And the Marines helped the Montagnards in different ways, such as acquiring for them food commodities, which they were not able to procure because of wartime conditions.
First Lieutenant Dean E. Stepp of the 3rd Battalion, 9th Marine Regiment, the Civil Affairs Officer.
The Montagnard resettlement could have become a serious problem. The attitude of the Marines working with the Montagnards kept it from becoming so. That was Sergeant Dale Dye reporting. I'm Corporal Jim Groom at the Combat Information Bureau, Da Nang, Vietnam. Operation Pegasus was designed to open the road to the Marine Combat Base at Quezon. Combat Correspondent Sergeant Dale Dye talked to PFC Alan Faust, who discovered a large mine on the road Operation Pegasus was clearing.
Well, the couple of guys in front of me that were using the mine detectors discovered the mine, and we did a little probing for it, and we found out that it really was a mine that the mine detectors had picked up. Well, this is an anti-tank mine. It's most likely made by the Chinese. It's around 3 inches deep and about a foot in diameter, and it has a wheel-type firing device on the top. Any pressure on the outside of the wheel will set the mine off.
What do you look for, and how do you keep it from going off right in your face?
Well, after the mine detector finds that there's gets a reading down there, come along with a bayonet and probe nice and easy until you find out if it hits something. And then you uncover the dirt nice and gentle and until you find out what's down there.
How does it go off? What type of explosive do you think is in there? And what type of vehicle is it designed to destroy?
Well, I don't think it's designed to actually destroy a vehicle. It's just to disable one, time being. And it'll most likely blow a wheel off of a truck or maybe take a track off a tank and hold up the whole operation a while. And it takes probably around 200 pounds pressure or so to set it off.
Well, Al, maybe you can tell us why the enemy put this mine here on a side road as opposed to putting it out on the main part of Route 9.
Well, as you can see behind you, there's a bridge there that the enemy had blown earlier, and this is the bypass around that bridge. And if we were to, the only way we can get past this stream down here would be to come around this bypass, otherwise we have to build a new bridge.
So you think then that they put it over here expecting us to take the easy way and go down the bypass and thereby hit the mine, is that right?
Right. The enemy will always put the mine where they expect you to go to take the easy way out.
Alan, you're preparing your charge now to go ahead and blow this mine. How about describing for us what you're doing?
Well, I'm dual priming this block of C4 here in case the one blasting cap doesn't work. Otherwise, then we'd have to wait a half an hour to be safe to make sure it doesn't go off in your face when you check it.
As Private First Class Faust puts the blasting cap on, he turns away and bends his helmet down before crimping the blasting cap, just in the precaution that the cap might go off.
These caps can be pretty sensitive sometimes. Sometimes a little jar will set them off. Sometimes you can throw them off a cliff and nothing will happen.
Clear on that side! Is it all clear over there?
The mine was destroyed, and the Marines of Operation Pegasus pushed on toward Quezon. That was Sergeant Dale Dye reporting. I'm Combat Correspondent Corporal Jim Groom at the Combat Information Bureau, Da Nang, Vietnam. A massive Marine-Arvin Army joint operation is in progress near the DMZ. Here's a report from the scene of Operation Pegasus.
Marines are now digging in along the sides of Route 9 in preparation for tomorrow's activities on the sweep towards the Marine compound at Quezon. I'm speaking this evening with Sergeant Mike R. Diltz. Sergeant Diltz has been the platoon commander for the 2nd Platoon of F Company, 2nd Battalion, 1st Marine Regiment during Operation Pegasus. Can you describe the actual mission of Operation Pegasus? In other words, what are we trying to do here along Route 9?
The whole objective is to clear a supply route to Quezon. Once we clear this route, we can get supplies into Quezon by vehicle. The people at Quezon will be much better equipped, more equipped to hold their own position, which seems to be wanted very badly by the Viet Cong at this time. There are many, many small trails that wind around through these hills. The terrain is tricky. But, a large majority of the time today, we did hack our own trails with machetes. We have one man up in front of the column hacking a trail through, and he has to be relieved often. This is strenuous work, and especially in this heat. We didn't receive any contact. We didn't make any contact. Didn't receive any fire. In my opinion, it was we had a lucky day. I hope the days to come are as good as the day we just had.
That's at least four bridges that I counted today, and most of them were semi-destroyed or in a state of bad repair. Can you give us your opinion on how they became that way and why we were securing them on this Operation Pegasus?
These bridges were probably blown to either prevent the VC from using this road or were blown by the VC to prevent us using the road. And these bridges will be rebuilt. They're being rebuilt now. Their engineers following us up, rebuilding the bridges as soon as we pass them.
Sergeant Mike R. Diltz, platoon commander of the 2nd Platoon of F Company, 2nd Battalion, 1st Marine Regiment, now sweeping Route 9 to Quezon on Operation Pegasus.
The men fighting in Operation Pegasus felt, generally, that theirs was an important and rewarding mission.
Corporal Gary L. Hall of Vincennes, Indiana. What do you think about this sweep towards Quezon? Are you pretty happy that we're finally going to get in there and relieve some of those troops? Or what's your opinion on this type of thing?
I think it's really great because I believe with a motor transport convoy to be opened up through Route 9 alleviate some of the troubles they're having at Quezon with the air supply, and if we can get this opened up, it should ease the tension on the red troops over there.
Private First Class Charles W. Tucker of Lawrence, Kansas. Give us your opinion of how it feels to be sweeping along Route 9 here and getting ready to relieve some of the pressure off of the troops at Quezon.
I feel it's really great because a lot of those troops up there at Quezon are really in hot water, so they really need supplies pretty bad. And the helicopters can't get through most of the time, so I think it's a real good deal to get this road secured.
So far in Operation Pegasus, the Allied forces have captured more than 600 individual and crew-served weapons and have killed more than 1,000 North Vietnamese Army and Viet Cong soldiers. Sergeant Dale Dye had that report. I'm Corporal Jim Groom at the Combat Information Bureau in Da Nang, Vietnam.